This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome in, welcome in. John Lopez, Captain Scott Null across from me, Caleb McCumber across from me. This is the Bite Me podcast, and this is how I like to set up a show. I don't do anything, well, or very little. Let Camille Null do it. She was really, really a star for us this week. Got on the Bite Me group page, which I highly recommend. A lot of y'all do. All of y'all do, if you haven't already. Join the Bite Me group page. You can ask questions. You can bring up topics. And you can advance the conversation, which shout out to Camille. Your better half did a real good job this week, Cap Scott. And we've got rapid fire. This is going to be somewhat of a unique Bite Me podcast this week. We're still going to hit topics, but it's going to be rapid fire, kind of, because we got so many to cover, thanks to her. And of course, if you want to subscribe, as I always mention, make sure you get on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts, and you can subscribe right there. So I really appreciate that from her. We certainly have a lot to cover, so we're going to dig right in. But of course, our listeners here on the Bite Me podcast always like to have an interest in what some of us are doing, and we appreciate that. Captain Caleb had posted a picture. I think you posted it on the Bite Me group page as well, of what looks like a nasty, nasty, nasty bruise on your arm from your son. Your son kicked your butt in baseball, it looked like.
It was worse than the Astros whooping the Yankees over there.
And you're literally saying the sun got in your eyes. The dog ate your homework.
Right. No, the batting cages that we have, they faced west. So either the batter or the pitcher one is going to have the sun in their face. And I was trying to be a good dad, and I won't do that again. But I put the sun in my eyes. And when I throw it, I can see it for a split second when it leaves my hands, and I can see it right where he hits it. Well, I can't see where he hits it. I can see right when he hits it, and then I can't see it again. Mm-hmm. And I was hanging out behind the L screen, watching his stride. We were working on his footwork, and I heard him square it up. And when I heard it, I knew I was screwed. And I got my head behind the L screen before it hit me. And the worst part is he's been hit a bunch of times.
And you're telling him to suck it up.
Yeah, suck it up. Stay out there. Play. This is what we got to do. And, man, he hit me, and I couldn't – and you know, you're not allowed to rub it either. You can't rub it till you get to first base. And so, man, his eyes got about as big as the baseball themselves. He thought I was about to kill him. And I told him, I said, good hit. And see, look, you don't have to – it doesn't hurt. You can keep playing. And I pitched him probably about another 40 or 50 to him. And, man, I was dying inside. It hurt yesterday. It hurts today. It's going to be great pulling that skiff tomorrow.
You probably didn't fool him because your eyes were watering.
Well, I don't know, because the sun was in them.
The sun was in them. And Cap Scott, of course, joins us. We're going to dig into these topics, but wanted to just see what you've been doing on the water this week, Cap Scott, before we dig in.
Well, I fished Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. I don't remember all of it. I know Thursday was awesome. I know that much. I know I was struggling before that. We had some high water, high winds. Things just weren't working. And then come Thursday, everything settled down. The water cleared up. Everything looked good. And one of our loyal listeners, Mr. Ben, he had a really good day. It was on his birthday.
Oh, man, that's great.
Had an awesome day. He got a bunch of fish on fly. We saw hundreds. Mm-hmm. I mean, we saw a lot of fish and didn't have to go anywhere. We pulled the same little area all day long. And then I went deer hunting after that.
I meant to ask you about that. I'm glad you brought that up. That was you had texted me a picture of it previously, I guess, just of it, you know, scouting or such and such. And what was that deer after all said and done?
It got entered into the Los Cazadores deer contest down in South Texas, and they officially scored it yesterday, I believe it was at 276. 276 inches. That is a monster.
Yikes.
That big one that we shot last year, everybody was so impressed with, was 244.
Man.
I mean, this thing, it had something like 90 inches of extra points. You know, man. Beyond just the typical stuff. It was an impressive deer, no doubt about it.
It was gorgeous. And,
we got We got the guy's grandson a pretty nice little Axis deer.
Mm-hmm.
11-year-old boy shot himself an Axis, so we had a good day.
That's a great weekend. Day.
Had Marcus Canales from MC Outfitters. He's the one that brought me the customers. He had a customer that wanted a really big deer, and I've got really big deer, so we hooked up and got it together. The landowner does it upright. You know, yeah. I mean, we had redfish on the half shell. We got, you know, nice dinners.
And, yeah.
They do it upright and got a nice place to stay. And me and Marcus take care of them on the hunting side. And so if anybody out there is looking for a really big deer, I mean, not all of our deer are like that. You know, I mean, that's a special one. But we do have some really nice deer available for the rest of the season. And I am available off and on through November, December, January. I think we can hunt into the end of February on that place. We have special permits.
Mm-hmm.
So
where they hit you up? Same place?
Yeah. Yeah. Just hit me up on Facebook and yeah, I've got pictures. The rut's fixing to kick in and I'm going to be over there with my camera doing my wildlife photography on the ranch and picking up some pictures of some of these really big bucks that we've got.
That's big time. Well, that's good.
There's one another picture that I want really bad. I mean, I'm working out a deal with the landowner. I'm saying, hey, you know, can we take payments on that one?
That's how I would do it.
I mean, I see big deer all the time, you know, and I get to watch them a lot. And I just don't get that excited about them. You know, some of these big, crazy looking deer. This is one of those that is if you had to take a picture and say this is your typical beautiful South Texas buck.
Yeah.
This would be it. He's 6 points on either side, about 23, 24 inches wide and really tall. Mm. He's just absolutely gorgeous. Not a lot of that trash stuff hanging off the sides or any of that. He's just a cool looking deer. Saw him for the first time Friday evening. And my God, it was one of those where I've not out there to hunt. I raised my rifle up.
Yeah. Like, oh, wait, I can't do this.
Yeah, took a really good look at him through that scope. And I was like, okay, no, don't do that. Camille will kill you.
Deer I like those big symmetrical ones. The ones that Grandpa shot.
Yeah, you would love this one. I mean, like I'm saying, he is the prototypical South Texas, what you think of as, you know, magazine cover.
Yeah.
Beautiful deer. Beautiful.
That's awesome.
I have to get on that installment plan. me and Scott been doing the bite me rounds. I had bite me guys last week and we caught fish real good. And then instead of taking people hunting, I'm going to see my buddy Ben. He called me on a roof off of the podcast.
How about that?
Yeah, Ben called me and said, man, I hate for you to have to drive all the way to Spring. I was like, man, I will gladly drive all the way to Spring to come see you.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We're gonna fish down here until the weather blows us off the water and go check out Ben up there.
There you go.
I might be able to delete everybody out of my phone that isn't a bite me listener at this point.
At this point, you're good to go. Allstateroofs.com. Allstateroofs.com. If you want to get that done help the fellows out here on the Bite Me podcast. All right. So all that is on the Bite Me group page. Like I said, I encourage everybody to join it. Join in. 8,300 people are on that group page, as is Camille Null. And I really do appreciate it. I'm sincerely thanking her. Because it was a good idea. You know, I've got this move that I was going on and I was working on some topics here and there, but she goes, hey, how about all these? So let's go through some of these. Some of these are going to be short, brief answers from Scott and Caleb. Some of them might be something that we can dig in a little more. So let's, for the next 50 minutes or so, let's just dig in. Some of them are not even having to do with fishing, but we'll start with the fishing ones. Cool season, which we're getting into cool season, cold front coming in today. Cool season artificial baits. When, what, and the best action to use on them. I'll start with you, Caleb.
You're correlating what's going on out there still. It's same answer, different time of year. If the bait's feeling good and it's erratic and moving around, then I'm going to throw something that's erratic and moves around, a rat tail plastic but even when you get into the corkies, everybody correlates corkies with cold water, which isn't necessarily true, but they do shine in that. And the reason is they're a suspending twitch bait. So when the bait's slow and doesn't move around a whole lot, you can do the same thing with the corky. But you can work that thing fast and dart it around too whenever you see the bait moving around quickly. But I don't really prescribe to the whole it's cold, we throw this, it's warm, we throw this as much as I do. I'm trying to match what I'm seeing out in front of me, and there's certain baits that do that better than others. It's hard to make a rat tail plastic dive up and down slowly.
Yeah.
Now you take it and drag it on bottom, that'll work from time to time. But at the end of the day, I'm just trying to find if I want it to move slow and lethargic, I'm going to find a bait that'll do that. And if I want it to move fast, then I'll either find a bait that'll do that, or I'll take my bait that is believed to be a slow bait and move that sucker fast.
How do you start, though, when the water starts to cool? Are you slower? Are you faster? Is it just a feel thing?
Man, it's a feel thing. But, if you pull up into wherever you're wanting to fish and you see bait jumping around or those little V wakes shooting around everywhere, mm-hmm. then you pretty well know that you can move it a little bit quicker. If you pull up somewhere and it's a bait jumping every now and again and everything's kind of slow and lazier seeming, then I'm going to start slower. If I don't know what it's doing, then I'm just going to vary back and forth from fast to slow to medium to high to low to middle and see what works for me.
Scott, what about cooler water, redfish, back lakes, bays and such?
They get happier the cooler it gets.
Mm-hmm.
And redfish will pick up steam this time of year. You start getting out of that 80 and 90 degree water temperatures that we've been in. And they've got a whole lot more fight to them when you do hook them. And you see them running and chasing bait and doing a lot more. It takes a lot to really stun a redfish into being lethargic.
Yeah. Yeah, we learned that during the freeze. How resilient they were. So let me ask you the same question though, Scott. What are you throwing, and does it matter?
Same things. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really doesn't change my game a whole heck of a lot. The water we fish in is so dadgum shallow that you get a little sunshine on it and it warms right back up.
Yeah.
Unless there's a bad cold front. I'm talking, way, way cold, darn, freezing.
Mm-hmm.
Then yeah, they'll slow up for a little bit for a day or so, but I'm not really going to fish on those days anyway.
Right. Right.
So it doesn't really change a whole hell of a lot for me.
Let me ask you this now. We'll go to another question from the group page. This is kind of related to that. Scott, I'll start with you for that reason. I have a question about the redfish life cycle. I understood that bull reds will migrate out to the Gulf and stay there. I have a place on a small bay off of a large bay, 3 foot on the highest tide, 12 to 14 miles from the Gulf. I fairly routinely catch 28 to 30 inch redfish, and my neighbor caught a 38 inch bull. Are these fish just not migrating to the Gulf for some reason is the question.
They generally move out around 30, give or take 30 inches. 32 is not real unusual to find up in the bays. There's no rule on it. There's not somebody standing at the gate going, okay, you're out.
You got to go. You're 29.
You got to go. It's about maturity, and redfish typically, give or take a little bit, are mature around 30 inches. Mm-hmm. And that's when they can start spawning. Spawning takes place in the passes around the Gulf passes and between the jetties, Pass Caballo, San Luis Pass, the natural passes as well. The babies come inside and they grow up. And when they mature, they go out into the open water.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody leaves home at 18, Some of them end up sticking around until they're 25, 26 years old. So that
sounds vaguely accurate. I mean,
yeah. So, the ones that stick around a little while, they probably grow a little bit more. Then you also have places like Baffin Bay where they are so far away from any pass. It's like the Indian River Lagoon in Florida. Those fish never go to the Gulf. Mm-hmm. They never spawn. They never, they never grow up. They're just big kids their whole life. And they stay back there in those places. I think that's more of a function of where they're growing up. Mm-hmm. They're so far into, like upper end of Baffin Bay is so far from any pass. Maybe they just get to a point where they think, well, I can't get out.
Right.
And they just stick around. I know there's a bunch of bulls that stay over there. Now in Louisiana, you don't have the same kind of passes that we do. It's more just you're in the bay and then you look out there and you're in the Gulf and you don't mm-hmm. know when you crossed over. Mm-hmm. If you don't happen to hit one of the sandbars that kind of sort of halfway, they're like our Galveston Island and Matagorda Island, but they're underwater. It's just big sandbars for the most part.
Right. So the answer to the question would be that 38-inch redfish was an anomaly and was just something that was right there.
Something else I've found is after we've had big storms, which we hadn't had this year, thank God, but following a big storm like Ike, back in the back of Greens, we found a lot of really big redfish back there.
Mm-hmm.
They were just wandering around. Me and Thomas Barlow were on them all that fall after Ike. Into the winter. Well, I caught one. Radney Foster was fly fishing with me and he caught one that was, 42 inches way back in the very back lake of Greens.
Hmm.
And that was in late December.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that fish just got lost. Honestly, I think he
could be.
I think he got pushed back in there by that super high tide. It was just a huge, there was a big, huge push of water. I think it just pushed a bunch of bull reds back there off the surf.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them just, whether they got lost or whether they were just back there and said, pretty nice living back here. No sharks. There's a lot of bait. There's a lot of big mullet back here.
Yeah, they're retired from breeding.
Yeah, they just hung out and had a nice little life here.
It's like me moving into town. I'm done. I'm done with the suburban life. Caleb, you've been to Louisiana a lot lately, as we all know. What have you seen? Because you were catching and talking about catching some oversized reds. Have you seen any of these sort of anomalies yourself?
Like Scott said, Louisiana, the Gulf is the bay and the bay is the Gulf. Around here, it's not uncommon to catch them, up to 30, 31, 32. The 38 isn't an everyday fish, but they're there too. Like Scott said, most all of them leave. Some of them don't. Some of them want to hang out and frankly, I don't blame them,
mm-hmm.
but yeah, it's not a rule that every single one of them gets out of here.
Okay. Well, let me start with you on this one, Caleb. I this is one where I really didn't, I really didn't have, the answer in my head, which way I would go on this, but you guys will, because I've seen everything on this. So the question is actually, it's from Mike Krulik, our guy over at Knock and Tail Lures. He texted me this morning. And he said, on a dump, does the tide drop at the pass first or on the back lake first? Is it a push or a pull of water? I've kind of seen both, but I could be dead wrong on this, Caleb. On a dump, which we talk about dumps, we want people to get out there and fish if they're safe and all that, to do that. Is it a push or a pull of the water? Does it drop at the pass first or the back lake first?
I've seen it happen all kinds of ways. And
okay,
I think
that makes me feel better.
Yeah. I week or two ago, I ran through a back lake that was a foot high in the front and a foot low in the back.
Hmm.
Typically it's going to leave the passes and then the water is going to follow it out the pass. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's a particular wind direction or maybe, the tide comes in the back last usually. Right. So mm-hmm. if the tide hasn't gotten all the way in the back and then it starts dumping back out, then you're going to have lower tides in the back than you are in the front. And there's all kinds of different ways it can go. But I think on a traditional dump, I'd have to say that it's going to be leaving the pass and pulling the rest of the way.
What are you seeing out there? What have you seen, Scott?
This one seemed to be pretty even. I was watching the passes and I was watching, some of the markers that are closer to the marshes. And it seemed like it was all happening all at once on this one, but we've had super high water as well. I think that makes a big difference on how it goes. If we've had really, really high water ahead of time,
mm-hmm.
or was it a normal, just a normal tide and then we're going to get the dump. I think that has a big part of it. Nothing in this thing is scientific. Everybody wants to know exactly what happens with a dump.
Yeah.
Every one of them is a little bit different, but just know that, you know, it's got to have that west in it. Got to be in north, northwest, west, you know, straight west will pull it out a little bit too, but west, northwest seems to be the absolute best for the upper coast. So, right. You know, from where I'm at on up, now down a little further south, it doesn't work quite as much. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Dean always laughs at me. He's like, I don't know what the hell you're talking about with a dump.
It is different. Well, that's all wind driven mostly.
Yeah. It's completely different down there. You know, we've got more marshes up on the upper end of the coast, and the marshes are where that dump occurs.
Yeah.
And it has to blow. A 5 to 10 west isn't going to do hardly a dang thing.
Right.
And that's where a lot of people get confused. And the messages I get is, you know, it's blowing 10 to 15 out of the west. That might stabilize the incoming tide to not bull up, but it's not enough to dump it. It's got to blow.
And this sounds self-serving, but that's part of the reason, you know, we like for people to listen to the podcast every week, because we do have what would Scott do, what would Caleb do. And you guys have been nails in terms of, like this last one, Scott, in terms of telling people, okay, this is going to be legit. Try it if you're safe, and we'll go from there. And then we've had one about 2 or 3 weeks ago, you know, where it's like, I don't know if that's going to be a true dump or not. So yeah, it's self-serving, but I think my guys here will help you on how to fish these. Let me ask you this real quick, Scott. When I've seen this, and Caleb just described it, you know, it goes out in the pass first, and it's shallow in the back. How does that affect how you're fishing these dumps? Do you go back? I would go back further first, but I don't know what you guys would do.
It depends on the dump. If it started at midnight and I'm going out at daylight, I'm not going to go back near as far. But when it first starts, yeah, I want to be all the way to the back.
Yeah.
And if I'm coinciding with me being on the water when the northwest wind hits and it starts pulling the water out, I'm going as far back as I can. Also going to have markers and know that when it gets to a certain level, I need to start pulling out, so I'm not Caleb in it and having to call me an airboat to get me back out of there.
Yeah.
And so I'll retreat, you know, as the water leaves, I'll move a little bit further out. And if it's a really big dump, one of those 3-footers, and I may end up, like when I was fishing greens, I'd end up all the way back out to the main lake. Mm-hmm. And there was times it was sketchy getting across the main lake there. Yeah. I mean, you got to play it by ear. You got to watch the conditions, and a whole lot of it is just learning it by trial and error.
Mm-hmm. You have error a few teaches you the best.
What's that?
Yeah. Errors along the way.
Errors teach you the best.
But Caleb, you know, we give you a hard time, and it's kind of just, you know, our deal here, but that's exactly what you were doing. What's right. I mean, what Scott just described, you were trying to, you knew what the wind was going to do. You were getting back there. And you were, you know, in tournament mode, so you got a little, you lost track of time, you got a little greedy, whatever you want to call it, but that's exactly what you were doing, right?
Well, make no mistake, I didn't lose track of time, and I didn't know what was going on. I was doing everything I could to leave this joint. It doesn't always work out that way.
Well, that's why.
And to be clear, this week, I don't think Scott or either one of us would consider this week a dump. This is more of a getting back down to closer to normal tides with a good solid outgoing tide. I think I said it last Wednesday, I'm gonna say it today. I think we're gonna kick their butts. I think it's gonna be a good solid day tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a lot to do with that tide pulling out, but I don't think it's to the point that it's pulling them out of the skinny water by any means. It's right. Just putting bait into the skinny water.
Yeah.
I mean, it dumped, but it didn't like go negative.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the railroad bridge in Galveston right now. It was right when the front hit, it was 2.5. It was plus 2.5, 2.4 something. And at the bottom of the low tide, it was 0.3. Mm. So, I mean, they lost a little over 2 feet of water in about, I don't know, 7 or 8 hours. That was a pretty good dump, and I'm sure it got things riled up and got the fish moving and got them feeding. But most of what it did, it pulled all that bait out of the back grasses. You know, that 2.5 foot high tide that bait was scattered everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I've been dealing with down here. They're back in the trees. Mm-hmm. I can hear them feeding. And what happened on me on Thursday, the water fell out just enough where it pulled all the bait back out into the lakes where I was fishing. And I think that's what this one did. It just pulled all the bait back to normal.
Right.
Looking at it, I mean, here we are at 4 o'clock in the afternoon after mm-hmm. that dump this morning. And it's already back almost to 1.5 feet. Yeah, it's already come back up a foot.
Yeah. You have some, Caleb?
It'll probably come back in more tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. We're getting that south wind back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So as soon as that happens, it's going to go right back up again.
We're going to go ahead. We're going to have a great question here on the Galveston Bay Complex, which I feel like both you guys would really be able to help. And we haven't really talked about it a lot lately, but I mentioned not all of them are necessarily fishing related. This one is semi-fishing related. Where is each of you guys' bucket list of places to fish that you have not yet been to? And I'm embarrassed, you know, you guys who have been listening, you know, consistently know this for me, but I've been really lucky to fish, you know, pretty much all over the world. Hell, I fished in Australia when I was down there covering the Olympics, and I fished in Japan. I fished in Korea because, you know, when I was working at the Chronicle, I would always take a couple of days and fish. I've never fished the Chandelier Islands. I fished Alaska. I fished the Caribbean. You know, if I make a trip, I'm going to fish. For some reason, that's one. Does that qualify as a bucket list? Because I could drive there tomorrow if I wanted. But
how do you say poppy cork in Korean?
You know what? I should have learned that. I fished in Ireland when I was in Ireland, and that was sweet. Well, you guys know me. I mean, I'm just kind of sick. I'm very sick when it comes to fishing. So I'm going to fish if I'm on a road trip somehow, some way. Like when I was covering the NBA way back in the day, and I talked about this a little bit on your Airwaves podcast, Caleb, I would always get like a little extendable rod or something. When we were playing a game in Sacramento, I was covering a game in Sacramento, I would drive to, you know, into Nevada and into Lake Tahoe and fish for, you know, fresh rainbow trout and all the lake trout and all that stuff. So I have fished, and I always make it a point, never been to the Chandelier Islands. It's ridiculous. I've got to get that done. Scott, you know people, man. You got to get me on the Chandelier Islands. I've been all over the world, but not in my own backyard.
I drove my boat out there like 3 weeks ago.
You did?
Yeah, from Venice to the Chandeliers. I mean, I stopped about 5 miles short, but that island chain comes all the way back around to Venice. It doesn't. The out there on the end is the popular spot, but from what I've understand is they just aren't what they used to be. They're yeah, smaller. They're tore up. They're, you know, more people there. All that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I can see that.
It's actually gotten better in the recent years. There was a period right there behind Katrina where it was all tore up, but I've looked at it on Google Earth. A whole lot of that's come back now.
Mm-hmm.
It's just shifting sands. You know, it's like a big pass around here.
Yeah.
You know, it comes and goes. Big storm comes and wipes a lot of it out. Time goes by and it builds back up. So what I'm hearing is it's getting better as we go.
Well, I don't care good, bad, or indifferent. I mean, for all the places I fished, to not have ever fished there is ridiculous, man.
The amount of tarpon that were out there was really cool.
Really?
Yeah, there was a lot of tarpon out there.
So what about you two guys? Scott, I'll start with you. Bucket list fishing destination that you haven't been to.
If I ever win the lottery, I'm going to South Pacific. Peace out.
And we'll see you in 6 months.
I don't know how long I'll stay, but it'll be a while. There's just some cool stuff to do down there. Main thing is GTs, you know, mm-hmm. the giant trevally. You can catch them up. It's like a big jackfish, but they're 50, 60 pounds, and they mm-hmm. eat flies like crazy up on the shallow flats. And nice. They beat up every bit of equipment you got. They beat it up. Had some friends go down there. They heard about that. They brought extra rods, you know, 12 weight fly rods, big, heavy stuff, what we use for tarpon here.
Mm-hmm.
And they came back with broken rods, broken reels, broken hearts. I mean, GTs are one of the meaner fish out there for mm-hmm. their size. Just imagine a jack on steroids.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just beasts. Mm-hmm. Probably fly fishing in Alaska, you know, going up there and doing some of the big rivers up there and having some fun. And I still want a permit. I fished for them.
You've talked about that a little bit. Yeah.
I've been all over Belize and I have not gotten the permit. I got one bite, got one of them to eat a fly and I missed the strike. But yeah, permit and giant trevally. Probably
yeah, that's what I was going to say. For those who don't know, the GTs is the giant trevally. And let's mark this day. Let's mark this day, October 26th. This podcast is going to air 2022. Finally, there's a fish that I've caught that Captain Scott Knoll has not caught. When I was in Australia, caught a couple of those suckers. Not huge, but I caught a couple of those GTs, Scott. That's why when I heard you saying that, I'm like, hallelujah, I got one. I got one that Scott hadn't caught. Of course, that might be the only one. How about you, Caleb?
I'm gonna take Scott out with some ultralight gear on jacks and talk to him in gibberish he can't understand and save him a lot of money.
With an Aussie accent?
Yeah.
or Guam.
Man, number one for me would be
Guam.
I want peacocks in Brazil. I don't want no stinking Mexican peacock. I don't want a Colombian peacock. I don't want a Florida peacock.
Yeah.
I want a Brazilian peacock on a topwater. That's what I want. I went after rooster fish a couple of times in the Pacific and no luck there. The guy I was with was acting like we just catch them, no problem. And that mm-hmm. was a lie. I sent Scott a picture of my side. My whole left rib cage was just one big black bruise mm-hmm. from working poppers all day in the surf. Didn't catch a side.
I would be with you. If it's not, go ahead.
They had this little surfboard looking lure. And it's just, like a surfboard. I can't explain it any better. And you throw it out and reel it along the top real fast. And right at the end of the day, I was throwing that because, frankly, I couldn't pop anymore. And you mm-hmm. just reel it in real fast. And, man, this rooster fish came up behind it. And he had you could see his you know, feathers or whatever out of the water. Mm-hmm. It was a good-sized one. And right before he bit it, a damn miniature trevally just smacks him in the side, broadsides him, and takes the lure from him. So I ended up working all day long to catch a jackfish in the Pacific. But my number one easily by far is a peacock bass in Brazil. And me and my buddy Wilson, we have plans to go next year, but things seem to always happen at this point in life that shuts it down last minute.
All right. Let's get personal here. When next year?
Like January, February?
Because like outside of the obvious, you know, the stupid fact that I haven't been to the Chandeliers, that would be mine. Yeah, that would be mine too. Peacock in Brazil, you know,
you got to be Brazil. I want to go trade something with the. Yeah. They're not called Indians or whatever they are. I want to go. I want to go give them some Costa sunglasses and come back with a stick with a rock tied at the end of it to you know whatever.
And, you know, like I said, I've been to some exotic places and always have managed to fish. I've never fished Cabo and that's ridiculous that I haven't been there either, but, it happens. I mean, I've been to some places that I wouldn't trade. That's for sure. But Cabo and Chandelier.
Cabo was awesome. I really liked Cabo and it was 10-foot seas that day.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
It was pretty good. I got to catch a pretty dang big Dorado while I watched my wife throw up. It was the ultimate vacation destination.
I want to go in. I want to go in. Not now, baby.
Well, so we bought her this watch that you wear to keep you from getting seasick. And it works by sending sends this electrolysis or something into your wrist.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the first thing is we didn't read the rules. You're supposed to wear it like for 2 or 3 days before you go on the boat. And she put it on that morning.
Oh,
but
no.
What actually ended up happening was, is when she put her hand on the aluminums to lean over the side of the boat to throw up, it just shocked the hell out of her because she was grounded out on aluminum. it was amazing.
They didn't tell you about that part.
No, it was probably in the instructions somewhere.
Well, that's good. I like that question. But we'll get some. If I can't go to Brazil, I'm going to go to Chandeliers. We'll do that. How about that? All right.
I know people.
I know you do. And I've been trying to cash in on that chip for a while. But
well, we talked about it a while back. One of the things I talked to Captain Troy about it, mm-hmm. and we were talking about maybe putting together a bite me cruise.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
The three of us and then they can take 12 at a time. So 9 lucky listeners figure it out. And
we're going to have to count.
Have a lottery. We'd have to have a lottery commenters. Or something.
Yeah. I say it's top 12 commenters, except Justin Lane, because he's always a smart ass.
What about Jeremy?
I don't know if we could take on the liability. We have to see what kind of insurance we're carrying.
We would need to carry.
Oh, you know, it's funny you bring that up because
I was thinking
if Scott can barely survive a damn 15 pound hog and he's wanting to go fish with bears in Alaska.
I tell you what, when I was in Alaska, that's always in the back of your mind, man. You know, they give you a 45 when they drop you off. So it's pretty intimidating. Like, okay, here, take this just in case. I'm like, just in case what? You mean they're going to come at me? He goes, no, they probably won't. I said, that's not helping, you know, because they dropped me and my sons off and they gave me a 45 in our fishing gear. I'm like, Jesus. Okay.
One of the greatest one-liners I've heard is as Compton actually just got back from hunting in Alaska and he and Mike were doing a podcast while I was at the World Series. And it was this big, long talk about whether or not bears are protected and whether you can shoot them or not in Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
And Jeremy said, if it looks at me wrong, I don't care if it's Yogi or Boo Boo. I'm shooting his ass.
I think that's the only way. That's the only excuse that you can have for that, as far as that's concerned. All right, let's go to Galveston, Scott. We talk a lot about, and you know, we've had Dean on, you know, talking about the lower coast. You guys know lower coast, middle coast, upper coast, but we spend a lot of time just kind of in general from, you know, below the Galveston area. We talk a lot about Galveston here and there, but we haven't dug in on the complex that is Galveston. So the question is, we all love fishing the mid and lower coast, but things are different in Galveston than down there. So I'll start with you, Scott, Caleb. I know you've been there a bunch too. So I want both of you guys to dig in on this. And I think what he's looking for, it sounds like it's somebody who's really learning the Bay Complex, and it's very, very different in different areas. You got Trinity Bay and, you know, all kinds of different things up there. And then you've got, you know, the West Bay and all these other things. He says it's so different up here. It might help if you can just give us kind of a thumbnail sketch of fishing the Galveston Bay Complex and how that might be different from some of the other things that we're talking about.
It's huge, and they're so different in so many different places. West Bay is so different from East and Trinity, and then you got the marshes over, you know, more towards Freeport, and there's so many different directions you can go. Deep water trout fishing in the middle of the bay, fishing the reefs, you can fish the shorelines, you can wade the shorelines. And I'd have to say, pick out what area you really want to concentrate on and learn it well, and maybe hire a guide that's really good in that area. Mm-hmm. You know, consult with some people and find out how you like to fish. You want the lures, you want the bait, how you want to fish. Pick out an area that you want to fish and get you a good teaching guide to get you started on that area. That's probably the best route to go. As far as just flat out talking about it, man, it would require a week's worth of shows, mm-hmm. you know, to really get into it and dig into it deep. Most of my fishing up there was a lot of what I do here, except it was more in the marsh instead of the open shorelines and grass flats. Learning the marshes, you can spend a whole lifetime in there. I mean, I was 14 years old. I'm running around in the marshes duck hunting and learning my way around back there, and did it up until just 5-6 years ago when I moved down here. They're still learning stuff. You know, I mean, just not too long before I left from there, I learned that two big, huge marsh complexes that actually connected. Mm-hmm. And I never knew that before, even with a Google Earth and all that stuff. I never knew it until I walked through there and found it.
Mm-hmm.
So you can fish Galveston Bay your whole life and not see the whole thing. One of my fly fishing customers early on, he was 80 something years old. And I took him back there in the back of Greens, and we were back there wandering around. And he stopped, he turned around, he looked at me, he said, I've been fishing this since I was a teenager. He said, I've never seen this, never even knew this existed.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what you got in Galveston. There's so much. And there's guys that specialize in Trinity. There's guys that specialize in East, West, Upper Bay system. So you just find you one of those guys and maybe take two or three trips with them and really ask them a bunch of questions. You know, get you a good guy that's, you know, a Jimmy West kind of guy that's going to actually teach you something, not just take you places and say, here, fish here, not really explain why. That's the kind of guys that you need. Short answer, no, I can't be a short answer guy on that one.
Well, I will say this, and Caleb, I want to get your thoughts. I grew up fishing, you know, down in Aransas Pass and all that area. Went to college, started fishing Matagorda, and been to East Matagorda for about 15, 20 years. I lived in the Walden, Humble area. So I said, well, that's pretty close to Trinity Bay. So I'm going to start fishing Trinity with the idea of like expanding from there, you know, but I wanted to start in Trinity Bay, kind of what Scott and I always talk about, you know, find an area, learn it real well. And Caleb, I fished in Trinity for 10, 12 years before I moved to Sabine and never left it because there was so many, you know, different things that I had to learn. And Scott talks about that all the time. Like I was fishing wells and the wells were still out of the water then. And then I went into, is it Lone Oak or whatever it's called on that one side, and fished, you know, and waded there and fished there. Then I went to the water release and fished there and drifted and stuff. So it truly is, you know, you can find my advice, and I want to get your thoughts on this, Caleb, find an area of Galveston that you have good access to, or maybe you have, a working, you know, rudimentary knowledge of, and then just dig in. And it might be year. It was over 10 years and I never left the Trinity Bay area.
No, and that's true. That's true for anywhere. It doesn't matter where you're at. Me personally, maybe I see things differently because I do travel a lot fishing. I don't find Galveston to fish any differently than anywhere else. I mean, it doesn't matter where you're at. If it's 4 foot deep with grass, it's 4 foot deep with grass. Galveston has a little bit of deeper water, but so does Aransas Pass and those in Corpus Christi Bay. At the end of the day, you've got shell down there. Instead of 5 foot deep, it's 15 foot deep. So I'll let my lure fall longer. The one thing that to me is unique to Galveston, and maybe because I haven't tried it in other places, is in Galveston, they seem to really like the bright chartreuse lures. I don't know why, but when I'm over there, I'll throw the heck out of them. Other places, I don't throw them that much. The marsh is pretty well the same as Matagorda or Freeport, or the ponds are 2 or 3 foot deep. They've got mud in them. They've got shell in them. They've got redfish swimming around in them. The channel, that's different. I don't know anything about fishing that stinking channel. I've got friends that do. I know they fish channels down in Corpus Christi. I can't intelligently speak about any of that, but I think Galveston is probably one of the easiest bays in Texas to fish. Honestly,
why is that?
You get schools out in the deep water pretty regularly. If you're on a tide change and you see some birds and some ribbon fish jumping any time of year, it can be schools of bull reds. There's countless reefs that are deep reefs, and to be fair, I probably haven't fished them in 5 years, but I guided over there for a year or two, and it was a lot less work than fishing for trout in Matagorda was. I go get on those reefs, the 1/4 ounce jig head and a paddle tail, and throw it down there. And when I could feel it clicking shell, I'd start working it. And it was pretty darn easy to catch fish. West Galveston Bay, I don't have much experience there. When I cross it, it's usually at 80 miles an hour on my way somewhere. I've got some friends that fish there and they seem to like it. They said it's very similar to the Matagorda complex, but I don't know. Keep it simple. Don't overthink it. You know, like you guys said, get a guy to help you out. Not only does it kind of give you some insight, but it helps build your confidence. But at the end of the day, if you're in Matagorda in 5 feet, or if you're in Galveston in 15 feet, working a lure 3 foot over the shell is the same dang thing.
Scott, you look like you want to say something. You want to add something here.
It's just so big. It's intimidating. You know, when people start looking at it, there's so much water out there. And that's why I always say, just break it down, pick an area, you know, pick one of the bay systems. Don't try to learn East Bay, Trinity Bay, and West Bay all at the same time. You just can't. Mm-hmm. And I grew up doing East Bay and a little bit of Trinity and just around the corner, and had friends fishing, you know, Trinity quite a bit. So I'd fish with them some. And then as time went on, I moved more over to West Bay, and they all have their own little idiosyncrasies about them. Trinity, you don't have the tides. You know, the tide is so far behind and so far removed from the passes, especially when you get up in Jack's Pocket, way up in the Anahuac area.
Mm-hmm.
mean, there's just not a lot of tide movement up there. So you have to learn how to read the tides a little bit better and understand distance away from passes and how it affects the tide. You know, the middle of West Bay can be an hour and a half, 2 hours different from the passes. And there's really no tide chart that shows you that. There's some that kind of help you out a little bit, but until you're actually out there and watch what happens, you know, how it changes, and you know, you'll see it. Oh, I've got an incoming tide, you know, San Luis Pass. It may be going out still in the back end of the marsh. And that's one of the hardest parts about learning it is figuring out what the tides are actually doing.
I do feel like I fish out of my boat much more in Galveston Bay Complex in Trinity, which is where I fish mostly, than wade fishing or otherwise, even kayaking. Would you agree with that, Caleb?
Easily. Mm-hmm. Easily. I've waded maybe 25 times in Galveston, but fished a whole heck of a lot more out of the boat.
Yeah.
I will say, though, when you're on the South Shoreline of East Galveston Bay and a 23-inch tide runner hits your quirky, you think you've just caught a 35-inch trout.
Mm-hmm.
Those tide runners are just different animals, man.
Strong, baby.
I can still hear my bray go bling whenever the first one ever that hit it. Me and my buddy Sam looked at each other and this is it, man. This is mm-hmm. the one. And it was like 23 inches.
That's pretty incredible. All right, so we'll get a couple more in here. This one is just kind of mean, but I will fall on the sword on this. Leave it to John to dig up a John boat from a church, slap a new motor on it, put it on a trailer, and sell it. Now, that's not the whole story. We talked about this.
No, he took it away from kids. Get it right.
That's what this guy's saying. Like, why are you stealing it from preschoolers in kindergarten? I didn't steal the John boat. It was, but I'll fall on the sword a little bit. So this John boat has been around the way, all those places I said I fished and you guys have fished. It's been there with little kids saying, we're going to fish in Alaska. And they get on it. They finally redid the playground. And so I was offered a John boat and I said, well, how about I slap a motor on it and we can get a new trailer? Well, it ended up, I'm not using it as much as I thought I would. So I took it to the boatyard and it's for sale down there. But no, it's not a boat that I stole from kindergartners. It's not.
You reckon a kindergartner ever jumped on it and said, I am the captain now?
Oh, dude, my wife says that they she's heard so many stories up there, like kids saying that they're fishing in Africa, you know, and they're driving that wheel. They're acting like they're, you know, Christopher Columbus and all this other stuff. But no, I didn't steal it.
Not anymore.
Not anymore. They're not because I took it. Oh boy, for the record, it was offered to me and I was gonna fish like some of those little skinny water areas. I never did really do too much of that. So here it is. Well, here's another one. I better say this one too. What does John call an 18 inning shutout like the other day for the Astros? A double complete game shutout? No, just a double shutout. That's what it is. That has a nice ring to it. I like these listeners that keep going. They know the story here.
But a double shutout, was that the whole game?
It was actually just a shutout, an 18-inning shutout. I think that's what I would call it, an 18-inning shutout, probably.
I would consider that complete.
Well, it was definitely complete. How about those Astros real quick, man? That was something else to – I know we haven't listened.
We want Houston.
I know. Well, they got them. They got
them. Well, now Phillies get started the same chant.
They did. Do they not learn anything?
Dummies.
I feel like Philly is a little bit stouter than New York, and I'm going to bet you that no matter what the count is, their stadium is empty with $22 tickets during the World Series.
You mean after the Astros take like a 2 or 3-0 lead?
I think this is going to be a following. Right now, while we're talking, in front of me, I have the 2017 Dodgers Yankees game on. And I think it's going to be a close series. I don't think it's going to be a blowout.
Well, they're hot. They're definitely hot. And Bryce Harper.
Were we 500 against them this year?
Yeah, but it was at the end of the year, and the Astros already clinched, and they beat Verlander when everybody was hung over because the Astros had clinched. So it was kind of hard to get a good gauge on it. But it's going to be a good series. And yeah, I know a lot of our listeners. We have some listeners in New York, so. And so I'm sure some in the Philadelphia area. So
I vote to send whoever hits McCullers in the elbow with a champagne bottle again, send them straight to the Yankees.
That's true. Man, the Yankees. What happened to the Yankees? They're soft. They're complaining about the roof. Those aren't my dad's Yankees, man. Those aren't my Yankees when I was a kid that were tougher than nails and were like the evil empire. It's
the fun part was, and Scott, as you don't know this about me, John, Scott does. Back in the good old days, my hobby was to mess with people on Facebook.
Oh, and, you talked about it.
Yeah, and so during, after, and before these games, I am going straight to Yankees fan pages. And the first couple of games, they're talking all kinds of trash about the Astros. After about the third game, they forgot the Astros existed and started eating their own.
No, they started putting on the Giants gear.
It was incredible. It was incredible. These people turn on each other quick.
Yeah.
Hey, and John, you're the sports world. What happened to the fellow that gave Altuve a hug? Did he really get fined $10,000?
I tried to find that out, but I never could nail it down. But that guy's brave, man. He could have gotten killed out there for just going up on a player like that. You never know what's going to happen.
Altuve just gave him a hug back, man. He's a loving people.
I will say, yeah, he's just such a good kid. I will say this. I was very proud of you, Caleb, for what it's worth, that you let your kid stay up as late as he wanted at that game on a school night. That's what it's all about right there.
Well, he may have had an upset stomach for a couple hours the next morning whenever I took him to school.
What'd you feed him?
No, I'm just saying, I don't think either one of us got up to about 9 o'clock, 9:30.
Oh, gotcha.
But, man, that's just something you can't miss, you know?
Oh, those are my favorite memories. I mean, I remember I'm obviously a lot older than you, Caleb, and roughly the same as Scott, so he'll remember this. I remember sitting with my dad watching Carlton Fisk on live TV hit that home run and start waving it fair and all that. I remember that vividly. I mean, that's he's never gonna forget that.
So we went and we had our tickets weren't very good. It was right field underneath the little porch thing that's underneath the scoreboard. Mm-hmm. So we were first level, but we were under there, and we couldn't see a stinking thing. They actually have TVs with TBS playing under there. So we made about an inning, and then our buddy Jason, he has club level tickets, and he called us and gave the heads up. The row in front of him never showed up, so we went and set up there.
Oh,
and there's
baby.
This guy sitting beside us, and this guy is raising all kinds of ruckus. And his wife finally leans over, and she said, "I'm real sorry y'all are having to deal with this." And it wasn't 30 seconds later, Cade's like chiming in with him. Like, Kate, I'm not going to say what Kate and this 50-year-old man were saying to the Yankees, but they were saying the same thing. Right?
All right.
But the aha moment is when my 10-year-old looked at me and said, "Why do they call New York when we're playing New York?" I was like, "Exactly, bro. Exactly."
All right. One more here. Then we get to what would Scott do? What would Caleb do? And you guys both have mentioned Google Earth in today's show. This is from a listener, trying to learn my specific base system. I hear all these different names of areas, and I'm just lost. Tried Google Earth. So my question is there a map that will show me the names of all the more well-known back lakes, flats, and areas? And I love this question because this is a guy, Scott, I'll start with you, that is trying to learn things the right way, the names, getting not just looking on Google Earth and asking that question, hey guys, not looking for spots, just looking for whatever, which we appreciate, but we get it. But this guy's like trying, like, where is an access point map or app or whatever that actually has the names? Because we fall into that rut. We start mentioning places, you know, and some of the most basic places that we mentioned, some people may not know where that is. So where do you find it with the actual names of these places?
Some of them are on those hotspot maps, you know, the top spot or hotspot or whatever it's called, that you can get, like Fish Tackle Unlimited. It's got every base system. Some of those are listed in there, but a whole lot of them are just local names. How Caleb came down here and fished with me and started naming off a couple of places. Hey, why don't we go check this and check that? I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about. And then there's, you know, like the Jetty guys, you know, they've got Glory Hole over here. They got this, they got that. You know, they got all these different names for these spots up and down the rocks that, get you, you just got to look at them.
Favorite spots.
Oh, we'll get to that. Let him finish. We'll get to that.
You couldn't come up with something else, man.
One of Stephen Reed spots.
There's going to be 700 boats at the Glory Hole this weekend.
Oh, boy, the Glory Hole is just packed.
Scott Moe said this is the place.
But, yeah, I mean, you know, they just have these little, you know, it's the guys that fish it all the time.
They
start calling out these names to them.
Yeah, I'd better get the hook out because that one got in there deep.
It's just little spots around different places that different local people start calling it something. And next thing you know, more local people are calling it by the same name. And then, you know, hell, there's a cut down here. I've heard 5 different names for it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's just...
You might want to hold those to yourself, but...
Yeah. Some of them you can use, some of them you can't.
I thought nipple was bad when I made it.
You know, there's a moment in every podcast that there's going to be comments about on the page. This is it. Just mark it down.
Got one. The glory hole.
No, it's Stephen Reed's glory hole. That's okay. Not, you know,
you just know about it. You just know about it.
But, man, it's so hard to do that. Every single bay system has a bird island.
Everyone, we all know every single one
of them. Every one of them has a snake island,
oyster
snake
lake
island, bird island, oyster lake. Mm-hmm. Greens. Hell, there's 2 different greens. You know, and we start talking about greens, and everybody is, you talking about Matagorda greens? Are you talking about Galveston greens? Yeah, and then there's Green Island down there in South Padre. So, yeah. Man, that's a hard one.
How about this,
though? It's a really, really hard one.
Caleb, you might be more in tune with this as much as you're on the tournament circuit. There are more and more chips that you can put into your Simrad or your Humminbird or whatever that actually have the names of space of places that are the common names. And that's that was the first thing I thought. Not all of them, but a good starting point.
Yeah, there are. But like Scott said, the names we use, and they typically don't correlate with the maps. The overall names, yeah, there's a, I think standard one makes a map. The trouble is you need a high powered Simrad to run it. You try to run it on a Garmin or something, it won't load as fast as your boat's moving, and it's kind of a nuisance to use. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can go to, I think it's Borders and Labels on Google Earth and turn it up to, you know, high or whatever. And then usually when you zoom in far enough, then the name will pop up. I find stuff here and there. But yeah, that standard mapping does it. I don't find it to be as effective here as it is. Like Louisiana, those names are all those different ponds and stuff are pretty well.
What's the recommendation, guys, for our listener who asked that question? Wants to know it the right way, learn the names. Just a combination of those things, the top spot map and maybe some of these chips.
Yeah, hot spot maps. Like I said, zooming on Google Earth, even the usual. The software that comes on your GPS, if you zoom in far enough, it'll tell you this and that. Mm-hmm. And I don't think Scott really, and I don't think we ever really use any code names on here. We just call it what it is, you know?
Yeah.
But I mean, so, you know, Scott was saying, I came over there and I was talking about this spot and that spot and screwed him up. I was over here running a 2 or 3 boat trip with Tommy Kuntz. I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years ago. Tommy's been here since the 20s or something. And, you know, I told him there's a spot. Every generation of guides even calls stuff different. There's a spot here we call the thumb. Everybody knows what the thumb is, unless you're over 50 years old, apparently. Because I called Tommy. I said, hey, they're eating good at the thumb, going over. And he said, the thumb? What the hell is the thumb? I was like, you've been guiding for 50 years and you don't know this? And and so that's where I kind of learned that it's your group of people just come up with stuff.
Maybe that's part of the answer too then. You know, mm-hmm. get with someone, not just local knowledge, but kind of speaks your language and can give to you, you know, knows the latest and the greatest terminology, so to speak.
Probably the easy way to do it, if you hear that fish are biting real good somewhere and you don't know, like, exactly where it's at, just text me and Scott and we'll help you find it.
That'll work. I actually had that happen to me the other day. I was on the water, and you'll get a kick out of this, Caleb. I was on the water. And it was one of those where a guy kind of comes by, recognizes my boat or me or whatever, and kind of waves and just keeps going by. And about a half hour later, he says, I got a direct message. I got a DM on my phone while I was on the boat and said, so where are you caught him today? I'm the guy that was on the boat that drove by and waved. Where are you? You know, what have you seen today? So I told him, but yeah, you can get a DM while you're on the water. And what's the name of that spot? I'm like, oh, okay.
That's an everyday occurrence, man.
You get that a lot.
Yeah, that's
on DMs.
Yeah, and then the other one I'll get is I'm pretty sure I saw you today. Where were you at?
Yeah. Which could
I get
be
that
BS.
A lot. I've been 20 miles above the intercoastal all day. Nobody saw me except a plane that flew over.
All right. What would, well, we know what, I'll start with you, Caleb, because we know Scott's going to be at the glory hole. So what would Scott do? What would Caleb do? Got some rain and some wind and some cooler temps coming in. Friday is going to be 96% chance of rain down in Matagorda anyway, because that's what I'm looking at first. But a little southwest wind, and then it goes straight to, Caleb, goes straight to a northwest wind, but not necessarily something that's going to be blowing or dump worthy, or what are your thoughts?
I would convince my boss that I promise I'll work on Friday and Saturday if he'll let me off on Wednesday and Thursday.
Okay.
That's what I would do. I think tomorrow's going to be lights out. I think Thursday is going to be pretty good. Friday and Saturday, I'm going to see my buddy and Ben in spring and check out his roof, because there's too much great fishing ahead of us to fish.
To get beat up.
Yeah, to fish this Friday and Saturday. Yeah. But hey, just, man, you know, like I've said it about 4 weeks in a row, and I love it. It's dealer's choice this time of year. Mm-hmm. Go do whatever you want as long as the weather lets you do it. This is the time of year to try those lures that you don't get to use very often or you don't have confidence in. This is the time of year to, you know, go drift if you want to, go wade if you want to. Yeah. You've got it's a high percentage on all of it. It's looking pretty good, especially with, like, me and Scott were talking about the tide coming out today and putting bait out in the drains and putting, you know, pulling bait out of the grass. And it's over here in my area, there might be some birds working some trout tomorrow.
Yeah.
Have you
seen much of that happening yet?
I drive an 18-foot poling skiff, dude. I don't spend much time in the bay anymore. if they're on the intercoastal, I might see them.
Now you're going to be a snob to us.
There were birds working redfish real good last week. I've heard rumor that they've been spotty and off and on, but it's just gonna pick up and get better and better and better and better. I was sending people videos of schools last week, and they said, "Man, it's awesome." I was like, "Hey, just getting started, dude."
Yeah, Scott.
Tomorrow I'm gonna be fishing back where I was last Thursday, probably. Shallow ponds. I think the water's pulled out enough. It's not coming back up real quick because it's still gonna be north. Thursday it's supposed to swing back more east, and the water's probably gonna start creeping back up. But I'll still be in those ponds, just hoping that it's not creeping up as fast as it could. Friday it's gonna, yeah, Friday, no,
yeah.
I've got a trip on Friday. 21 gusting to 30 at daylight. I think we're gonna have to put that one off.
Yeah.
If I were fishing on Saturday, which I'm not, I would say that there's a good chance of a dump on Saturday.
Mm-hmm. But how much of one? Because where I'm looking, it's not real strong. I don't know about you.
Here it's showing 19 gusting, okay. 24, 18 gusting, 23, and it is straight northwest.
All right.
And if that's the case, I didn't look at the upper coast and see what that's showing. But for around here, that's pretty strong. Yeah. And it could be. Basically, what's going to happen is we're going to have pretty much normal tides. It's not going to go super high like it was before. So now we're going to be sitting on a normal tide with a northwest. Mm-hmm. And so that could dump some water out and really draw some water out of some of the back lakes. It's a possibility some of the back lakes might go a little bit dry on this one.
Yeah.
And that would pull all those fish out into little drains in the bayous and stuff. And it could be a little mini dump. I don't think it's going to be an epic one or anything, but it can be pretty good.
Well, you guys are good, man. That was really fun. A lot of questions. Thanks for the questions. And certainly thanks to everybody who gets on the Bite Me group page. Someone was asking on the group page just this morning. I answered them about the Wade Wright belt and the Bite Me combo. So appreciate that. I'm sure they do. Jason and Tim do a great job. Don't forget the Bite Me 20 code to get that 20% off on that. I posted it on there. Thanks to Michael Krulik for the question that he gave us, which was very good. And of course, he's going to take care of the Bite Me listeners as well with the Bite Me 20 code. Get 20% off all those knock and tail lures. I need to restock myself, actually. And of course, Scott and Caleb just knocking it out of the park, as they always do. Love talking fishing with these guys. I say it all the time. It's my favorite hour of the week. I hope it's you guys' favorite hour of the week as well. Next week, we're going to have JT Koshy. That was another question that came up on the Bite Me group page. Man, I really would like to hear some more from JT because of just the vast knowledge that he has. So you ask and ye shall receive. I'll get JT from the boatyard. By the way, if you get out to the boatyard in Kima, you may want to pick up a little 14 John boat that's been all over the world. It has SS Shepherd on the side of it with a little 6-horsepower Tohatsu, brand new. You can pick that up at the boatyard as well. AllstateRoofs.com. You're going to be busy on that. Captain Scott, anything that you need? I know we want to get some gear on some of our listeners. We have some good pictures of people representing the Bite Me podcast. The gear is at ScottNullPhotography.com. Anything else that I'm missing, Scott?
Caleb and I had an email that we were supposed to answer, but we didn't.
Oh, okay, do about... it. Because I tried to write them all down. I must have missed
that. Yeah, I was going to just tell Caleb he needs to email that guy back because he's more into the tournament fishing stuff than I am.
Oh, that one about the
fellow wants to know how to pre-fish for a one-day little charity tournament or something. My suggestion is go fishing. Just go do your normal thing and hope that you do well. It's really hard to fish for it's hard to fish a one-day charity tournament if you've only have one day to pre-fish it. You know, pre-fishing is more about fishing for several days and checking a lot of stuff out.
Yeah,
a one-day pre-fishing, go check your favorite spots and see what's happening. That's about the end of that, I guess.
There you go.
And the goal is to not catch them while you're there.
Yes.
And that's hard for people to do.
Yeah, damn near impossible. Me and Daniel were on a school before a tournament this summer, and I said, "Don't cast." He's like, "Are you kidding me?" Yep. Don't. We're gonna sit here and look at him.
Just gonna look at him. All right, that's boys, it. Man. Anything from you, Caleb? It sounded like you might have had something you wanted to say. No.
Go Astros.
Go Astros. Yeah. Yes. Let's go Astros. Next time we talk, they may have. Let's see. That's gonna be Tuesday. So they're going to play Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. They might have swept it by the next time.
I'm playing Sunday. Sunday's off.
I know. They're playing Friday, Saturday.
Friday, Saturday, travel Sunday, play Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, travel Thursday, play Friday, Saturday. Right.
Oh, so they won't have
Yankees out there.
We'll see.
For them Yankees out there, I have a roofing company if y'all like that roof put on for y'all.
Oh, I like that. So they can quit bitching about the wind and the roof. That's good, Caleb. Mm-hmm. I like that.
And the rain.
I'm charging them every upcharge I got.
That's right. It's going to cost you. All right, guys. Thanks. Appreciate it. You guys did a great job as always. I hope everybody has a good weekend. Go out. Call in sick, man. Tell them Scott told you. Call in sick. Go fish on the Thursday. See if you can get away with it. And if you do get out on the weekend, do the best you can. Catch them up. We will talk to you next time.